Therapy with My Mom is intended for educational purposes only. Everything discussed on Therapy with My Mom is not to be taken as a medical recommendation, but rather as personal and professional opinion. This podcast is not meant to represent or replace psychotherapy services. If you are in need of emotional assistance, please seek out a local mental health professional that can cater to your individual needs. Welcome to Therapy with My Mom, a podcast hosted by a mother and son who love each other very much.
Aw, hi, I'm Julie Barkowskis. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, a certified addictions counselor, as well as a somatic experiencing practitioner. I've been providing therapy on an outpatient basis in my private practice for over 20 years.
I'm Ryan Barkowskis, her son, and a millennial that was graced with having two parents who are both social workers.
This podcast is here to educate our listeners on the various aspects surrounding mental health.
Our guests will include individuals who are going to share personal stories on mental health struggles, as well as professionals who can shed light on the array of therapeutic approaches.
We hope you enjoy the journey with us. Welcome to our show.
Before we begin, I want to mention, because we get to enjoy the visual elements, and so far our listeners do not, our guest today has an amazing background that she had designed behind her. So with the topic that we're going to be talking about today, and it is her specialty, in beautiful graphic black and yellow is toxic relationships, another addiction. And who is it that we are talking to today, Mom?
We have the pleasure of interviewing Pamela Morgan, who I actually discovered through her one of her trainings on toxic relationships, through her Key Insights training program. And Pamela is, I just was really impressed with the training that I attended. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I got to have her on our podcast. So that's how this has all come about.
Well, absolutely. Welcome, Pamela. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
Absolutely. So we already mentioned the topic. We're going to talk about toxic relationships. And can you tell us just a quick overview? What does that mean? Why are you doing classes or, you know, some instructional material on toxic relationships?
Well, it evolved. Let me tell you how it came about.
Yeah.
I'm in recovery from a drug and alcohol addiction. And 31 years ago, when I came into recovery from the drugs, I kind of thought drugs were the problem. And once I stopped using, everything would be fine. Everything would be okay. Mm-hmm. And found out that I was still in trouble. Mm. I was making really poor decisions and getting a lot of emotional pain from relationships. And the scary part was that I was having thoughts of using drugs again. And I knew that I didn't want to use drugs again. And I was willing to do whatever I needed to do to keep that from happening. Mm-hmm. And so going back and forth in and out of relationships for that first almost a year of my recovery, and finally getting to a point with a relationship where I realized that if I didn't get out, I was going to relapse. I was having dreams of using. I was having dreams of suicide. And suicide was not something unfamiliar to me. Thoughts of suicide, suicidal attempts was not unfamiliar to me. I had tried to commit suicide in my earlier years, in my early adulthood, three times. Oh my God. And that was before I started using drugs. And so when I started having dreams of suicide and just really falling apart, mm-hmm. because this person that I was in a relationship with was not as into me as I was him, and mm-hmm. Was exhibiting signs of cheating, I knew there was somebody else in his life. And I was just, it just felt like a rug was being pulled out from under me. Yeah. And I had no foundation. I had not built a foundation in recovery, because as soon as I got clean, I replaced the drugs with people. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't have a strong foundation to stand on. And that shook me. It literally shook me. And I started digging for information to help me make it through this and to get out of this relationship. He hadn't left, and we hadn't broke up, but the dynamics of the relationship were such that I couldn't handle knowing in my heart that he was cheating on me. Mm-hmm. And we were living together, but he was gone most of the time, night after night. And it was just, it was trauma for me. And mm-hmm. I started digging for material information, something biblical, something spiritual in the 12 step arena, in the biblical arena. I was just searching for something to help. And so the toxic relationships workshops and the book evolved as a result of me going through everything that's written in there mm-hmm. to bring me out of my own toxicity. So it's not a story of, it's not so much the story of what I went through, but what helped me come out.
Okay.
And to change my life. And the subtopic of the toxic relationship workshop is it love or are you just thirsty? And that was a question that was posed to me in my prayer time with my higher power, because I was like, but I got all this love to give and mm-hmm. nobody, you know, is receptive and I need somebody to love me and I'm in love and why this person won't love me back. And that question came, is it love or are you just thirsty? And mm-hmm. I had to acknowledge that I was trying to fill a void, just like I had tried to fill the void or the thirst with drugs, with alcohol, trying mm-hmm. to fill myself yeah. up, trying to be okay, trying to satisfy my hedonic tone to get that place of happiness, pursuing happiness and using whatever I could get my hands on that I thought might bring me happiness, right?
Right.
And only to come up still thirsty. And so that's how it all evolved.
Well, it's quite a story. My gosh.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. And to really use that as like, this is your recovery and how you can really champion that cause is like helping other people with it now.
Well, and I think experience says a lot, right? If you walk the walk and you can talk the talk. And so there's that level of understanding that, you know, you can actually help other people mm-hmm. around the subject matter if you've wrestled with it yourself or worked on it within yourself. You know, the interesting thing is you mentioned too about addiction. You know, there is such a thing as cross addiction, or people, you know, trading one addiction for the other, or finding that, you know, they have more than one addiction. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really awesome that you're able to look at how this is just another facet of looking for something else to make you feel okay, right? Or, you know, or some other method of filling that void. So that's really it's awesome that you can get into this subject. Did you identify for yourself what was the I'm trying to think of the right word, like the aha moments?
No, it, you know, before, because this came about before I had clients, you know, before I was working in the field. This mm-hmm. was actually the end of my first year in recovery.
Great.
And yeah, I don't think I would have stayed clean otherwise had I not gotten the revelations or the epiphanies, you know, and the insight that I received. I would not have made it past that first year. And so I think one of the biggest things is that really getting honest, you know, getting honest with myself mm-hmm. about the fact that I was trying to fill a void, and then realizing part of the problem or why there was such a void in my life. My mother was 15 and my father was 16 when I was born.
Oh, wow.
And I never had my dad growing up. I never had my dad in my life. I met him when I was 7 was the first time I saw him. And at about 13, I saw him again. He was never that go-to person that was available for me that was there. And so that, I think, Julie, that was a huge eye-opener for me to realize that I was looking for that male affirmation. Mm-hmm. I was looking for someone to affirm me, to say I was okay, to say I was acceptable, to say that I was beautiful, to say that they wanted me. And that drove my choices. Mm-hmm. So whenever I was approached by a male, if they said the right things to hit that emptiness and that spot that later I realized only could be filled by a relationship with myself and with God. Mm-hmm. But it was such a huge void. It was always screaming, feed me, you know? And when I realized that that's what I had been doing, and it was kind of at that point, because it was early on, that I realized I couldn't feel sorry for myself. I was not a victim. Mm-hmm. Because I was using the people, the guys, I was using the relationships myself to try to make me feel good and make mm-hmm. me be okay. And mm-hmm. so it became necessary for me to accept personal responsibility for my own actions and my own choices, which helped me tremendously work through some resentments yeah. that I would have carried much longer had I not accepted the fact that they didn't. There's a term that's used in a 12-step arena, knocking somebody off, right? When I realized they didn't knock me off, I knocked them off. Mm. Like I really was going from person to person, predator, looking for mm-hmm. somebody to use to try to make me mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah.
And that helped me to realize the work had to be done on me. I had to work on me, as opposed to developing that mindset that, you know, there's just no good men in the world. And, you know, no, I had to deal with me. I believe that water seeks its mm-hmm. own level. To have, you must be. And so if I wanted to eventually have a healthy relationship, I needed to become healthy.
Yeah. Absolutely. I like that. I mean, that's wow. so, you know, we've talked about a little bit of self-awareness and honesty on here. And that's a point that as I work on my own mental health, and we all do, is being truly honest to yourself isn't easy. I think there's times that we have little epiphanies and revelations, but if we're not backing that up, like then we're just hearing that truth and then lying to ourselves as we keep going until we hit a breaking point, and you eventually hit it, like you said, with one of these relationships that you realized this has to end. Would you share how old were you at that time when you kind of hit that point and realized this, you know, it changes from this day on?
I was 34. Mm-hmm. when I came into recovery, and I had to have turned 35 already when I started writing, started journaling.
I would have guessed her to be much younger because she looks so much younger, doesn't mm-hmm. she, Ryan?
You know? Absolutely. She's beautiful.
Our viewers can't see yeah. how gorgeous she is, but
they'll get a picture
Thank
later.
Thank you so much. Thank you. You know, wow, in these 31 years, I have been through, I mean, I'm 66, but the 31 years of recovery, I have been through a lot. And I will say this, I'm grateful I don't look like what I've been through.
Oh, that's true. That's, you know, there is something to be said about how you might have looked if you had stayed mm-hmm. in that. So,
yeah,
so grateful that you are looking so healthy and so vital.
Yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm really, I guess, fascinated. I'm almost impressed in the first case. You said it was an issue that you replaced using drugs with people. Like you found that that was still an addiction for you, right? Or, you know, then you had the toxic people in your life. But you didn't replace it with like another substance or something like that. You know, that's where some people might be like, oh, I'm talking to these people instead, or trying to surround myself with people who I think are going to be good for me. And then you had to make that realization that they were not, and they were going to be a problem.
And it wasn't just romantic relationships, but right. I later was able to see that it wasn't just romantic relationships. It was my need to be needed, my need to fit in, mm-hmm. my need to be accepted. I was very needy, and I thrived on the attention, and you know, and that was making me sick, because no matter how much I got, I couldn't get enough. It was just like with the drugs. Mm-hmm. No matter how much I got, I didn't have enough. And I was very unhappy, mm-hmm. because my happiness was contingent on people acting like I needed them to act for me to be okay.
Yeah.
And so right. whenever they didn't, then I wasn't okay, you know?
Right.
And so that at that point, it's like, you got to do or die, kid. You know, you got to do or die. You got to get mm-hmm. this together or you're not going to make it. Mm-hmm. And I came to the resolve, and this has been a thread in my recovery. If I can't get honest, I can't get free. And that's something that I share with my clients, with my sponsees. You know, honesty is the key. And in the 12-step arena that I'm a part of, Narcotics Anonymous, in the basic text, it says that honesty is the antidote to our diseased thinking. And so that antidote, you know, I think about when a person gets bit by a snake, right? Mm-hmm. And they need the antidote so that they can live. And so right. honesty affords us the opportunity to live, to truly live, not just breathe air, but to truly live a life with substance, to mm-hmm. truly live a meaningful existence and a meaningful life, is to be honest first and foremost with oneself, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And so that was very freeing for me, getting honest with my shortcomings, you know, identifying, recognizing my own shortcomings and not blaming. Cause see, there were places I could blame it. Mm-hmm. I could blame my dad. I could blame my mother, you know, mm-hmm. at 15, giving birth to me and not really being ready to parent. And so there was some rejection issues there and some abandonment issues with my father and my mother, because though she was in the house, my grandmother was really the mother of us both, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have, you know, just blamed and continued to stay like I was, because it's not my fault. But I didn't want to be miserable. I didn't want to be clean and miserable, and I didn't want to relapse.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the driving forces for me. Since then, though, in dealing with people who are not coming out of a substance abuse addiction, and those people, I call them regular earthlings, you know, they're not recovering addicts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not recovering from drugs, but nevertheless, they too have toxic relationship issues. And so this toxic relationship issue for me, the awareness of it emerged after the drug addiction, but the emergence of the toxicity in relationships emerged in my childhood, right. long before drugs and alcohol right. were a problem.
Right.
That makes it a universal problem, not just identifiable for people with drug and alcohol problems.
I do think there's a lot to be said about unresolved issues that if they're not taken care of, then they show up, you know, and mm-hmm. and how they manifest or how they appear in everybody's lives can be different. And you are correct that a certain percentage of people that's going to show up with a certain percentage of people trying to fill that void or continuing to repeat a pattern of being abandoned or,
yeah.
you know, and yeah. so forth. What I was wondering, you mentioned, obviously, you have clients. So what? Tell us a little bit about you on a professional level so the audience can get to know you a little better in that area.
Okay. Well, I started out as a minister, actually. Never intended to work in substance abuse, mm-hmm. right? And So I was kind of knocking on doors, you know, asking people, can I come in and teach this series that I had written called Keys to Freedom Educational Workshop Series, much of which is now in the book. Mm-hmm. But it was mm-hmm. the principles and the what I had learned that freed me up from toxic relationships. I actually went through 9 years practicing celibacy. And I say practicing because it wasn't a precise science. I gave it my best shot, though. For the first time in my life, I got a chance to know myself without being dependent on mm-hmm. another human being to validate me. Mm-hmm. During that time, I wrote a lot. I wrote down, you know, what I was experiencing. I journaled, and the concepts that I went through, I put in the form of a workshop series. So I was going to treatment centers and shelters and, you know, knocking on doors. And at the same time, I was doing, we were having once a year, myself and some of the women I sponsored and just women that I met in recovery who were gleaning from the message of getting out of and staying out of toxic relationships, we started doing seminars where we would invite free people to come and just from shelters, from churches, from treatment centers, and we would talk about toxic relationships, what we had been through, share our testimonies, and talk about the principles of getting out and staying out. The first job was I was on the radio talking about the upcoming seminar. Mm-hmm. And the president of an organization here, a Catholic Social Services in our county, heard me on the radio and got my phone number and called me and asked me, would I like a job? Now, you got to understand, at that point in my life, from the time I came into recovery, March 5th, 1991, up until 7 years later, I had not worked a job. Wow. Prior to my drug addiction spiraling out, in my drug addiction, I worked for the Secretary of State. I worked for General Motors, a bank. I always had really good jobs. Mm-hmm. But for 7 years, I had not worked. In that 7 years, I was working on my recovery, writing. At that time, I wrote the first edition. I was writing the first edition of Toxic Relationships, but I hadn't worked. So this woman called me and she said, would you like to work for our organization? I was like, yeah. So she said, well, we have a grant. It was a United Way grant. And she said, as soon as it's, we get our funding, we're going to hire you. And she did. It took about 2-3 months. That was the longest 2-3 months. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she hired me. Gave me a job, a office, a computer. I had never worked on a computer. She gave me the booklet that went with it and set me in an office. And I developed a program called Women in Crisis. Now, I had done a nonprofit as a Mothers in Crisis, which came out of Florida. They're still doing it too in Tallahassee, Florida. And so I started the Detroit chapter with them, and I had been doing Mothers in Crisis. So when this woman hired me, she hired me to do a program on women in crisis, and it afforded me to get paid mm-hmm. to go into treatment centers and shelters. Nice little salary, too, for 3 years. Awesome. Yes, uh-huh. For 3 years. The grant lasted 3 years. Well, when the grant ended, I got a call from a treatment center where I had been volunteering to do the educational workshop series. And they said one of their therapists had relapsed and Would I like a job? Now, this was like jobs would come without me even putting in applications. Like mm-hmm. these jobs would find right. me, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I was like, yes, that was right on time. And then I got hired as a therapist and had to get my certification, you know, and all of that.
Yeah, wow.
To work in this field. And so my experience really did bode well for me. As a therapist, and I will never forget my first caseload. It was, you know, it was like amazing to be able to utilize my experience, strengths, and hopes, and some education that I was receiving along the way.
Mm-hmm.
In getting that certification, I had to go to trainings, right? So I'm going to these trainings and I'm listening to a lot of conversation about addiction, but it was on a college level and it wasn't user friendly for me
mm-hmm.
because now I have a master's in business and a bachelor's in human services now. But at that time I didn't have anything. And so these trainings I was going to, they were not user friendly. And so what I did was I thought there needs to be a training on toxic relationships for other therapists to take this information and use it like I'm using it for my clients so that they can use it for their clients. And I had a supervisor who was awesome, awesome woman of God. And she encouraged me to write my first training, Toxic Relationships, Another Addiction. Mm-hmm. And I did. And I just knew nobody was going to show up. You know, it's like, who's mm-hmm. going to come in here? I have no degree, you know, hadn't even gotten my certification yet. I was still working on it. And my first training, I had 50 people that came to the toxic relationship training. And so that was the first training, and which I thought was going to be the only training. I didn't aspire to do what I do. Like, I didn't have the mindset or even the thought that it could be possible to do what I now do as my only source of income. And that is to facilitate training, my biggest source of income, to facilitate training for substance abuse professionals, social workers, and other human mm-hmm. service workers, mm-hmm. you know, through my business that I developed, Key Insights LLC. And so that's how we met, you know, that's how Julie and I met, Ryan.
Yeah.
And so that kind of brings us up to where I'm at right now.
How impressive. You know, like you were volunteering, like you were like, I just need to get this message out there. I'm just trying to tell my story, help other people first, not getting paid. And then that's how you then get those jobs that you don't apply for, because then someone's like, oh, this person's been like doing this just because they care. I want to hire this person.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
So I know that there's a number of key insights. I love the title here, Key mm-hmm. Insights,
mm-hmm.
that you shared. Yes, I got that one. Ryan, isn't that amazing that your mom can actually make a connection like that?
Key insights, yeah. You're incredible.
So, you know, that there are some really informed tools that individuals who are working on coming out of these addictive relationships are finding ways to work their way in terms of greater self-awareness, connecting to some of the issues that might be going on for them. And I was just wondering if there's something in particular that you wanted to share with the listeners that might be a takeaway, something that they could maybe, plant the seed and start to help it start growing, per se, in that direction.
Let me pull from the book, chapter 2, because chapter 1 is helping to identify what a toxic relationship is and how it is another addiction. But chapter 2 is it love or are you just thirsty? And if a person would just take a look at the relationships that they've been in the past and what they thought was there in what they saw in that other person and what was actually there later, mm-hmm. it would help them to realize that their vision has been obscured. And as a result of being thirsty, because thirsty people naturally, if they don't get the water and the nutrients that they need in their body, they become dehydrated. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And once we become dehydrated, we begin to hallucinate and see mirages.
Ooh.
You know, and so it is emotionally and spiritually. We see hallucinations and mirages. We see in people who and what we want them to be instead of seeing who they really are and what mm-hmm. they're really up to. And so we think we're in love, but we're in love with an image that we painted in our own mind through our own obscured vision. Mm-hmm. But when I began to come out, I was no longer caught up in that thirst. You know, a thirst is an eager, famishing, all-consuming craving. It's a discomfort caused by a need. And so once I began to satisfy that deep inner internal thirst, that internal need mm-hmm. with spiritual means, as opposed to trying to use external means to satisfy an internal condition, then I was able to begin to feel that truly satisfy that need mm-hmm. because it's a spiritual need, it's an emotional need, and we can't rely on other people to satisfy it. Yeah. And so in my pursuit of getting to know myself, I also had to pursue a relationship with a power greater than me, with my higher power, who I choose to call God. And I was able then to get some corrected vision. So then I started seeing what was really around me and the choices that I had made that were unhealthy and not good for me. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a questionnaire. There are a few quizzes or assessments in the book. But one of the things that is in the true and false questionnaire is one of the comments that I latch on to people just because they say they want or need me instead of taking the time to see if they are good for me. You know, how often do we, you know, and I'm talking to the listeners now, how often do you step back after you meet somebody that you feel attracted to? Do you step back and say, I'm gonna get to know more about this person before I get so close up on this that I can't see what's really there? You know, mm-hmm. I do a demonstration where I ask people in the training to put a piece of paper, whatever you have in front of you with writing on it, put it writing side up. And Julie, I don't know if you did this where you
yes. In-
and
yes.
put it all the way up yeah. to your face, yes. touching your nose. Now read it. Well, you can't read it because you're too close up on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it is here with relationships, getting sexually involved and heavily involved in a relationship obscures the vision because you're trying to fill a thirst mm-hmm. and you're not able to mm-hmm. see from a distance what's really there. And so I encourage people to take the time to see if the person is really good for you. And in that time, or in between relationships, when there's no one, you know, rather than doing what I did for many years, even as a child at 13, 14, at a young age, going from boy to boy, just, you know, needed to be able to say somebody wanted me. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember being a child in grade school, passing the note. Now, most people remember the note. Do you love me? Yes or no? Check the box, right? Mm-hmm. But for me as a child, remember that child who never had a father, who didn't have a father in her life. Mm-hmm. For me, that was a serious note. Mm-hmm. And I needed it to come back with a yes. And mm-hmm. when it came back with a no, I was crushed.
Yeah.
You know? And so at 13, I got involved in a relationship with a 22-year-old man.
Oh, wow.
He didn't seem like a man, or I didn't seem like a child, because I didn't see that big of a gap between us. But he said all the right things. He was in the neighborhood, you know, and he said all the right things. And my mother had had a car accident at that time, and she was very, very sick, near death. And so all the family's attention was on her. So I was kind of doing what I felt like doing. And they weren't paying attention to me. And I was trying to fill the void.
You know, you're talking about developmental trauma. You're talking about these other events that, you know, and I'm just moved by the fact that you really are an inspiration to a lot of our listeners about how you've come out of all that. And here you are today, really being someone who's saying, hey, I'm now a crusader about you can do this and you can work on your unresolved issues, the toxicity of your past, and just by getting honest with yourself.
Yeah. And so, being humble. I think, you know, if I were to draw a box and or a rectangle, and on each side I put a spiritual principle, I talk about the importance of honesty. If you can't get honest, you can't get free. Humility, being humble enough to say I need help, being humble enough to admit that my choices are not good for me. Because in humbling myself, it put me in a place of being almost hid, like hid under my higher power's shadow, where I had a reprieve, a time where I could get some foundation and get to know myself and my God, and be able to stabilize where I wasn't constantly being hit with opportunities, if for lack of a better word, or tendencies or temptations to get in another relationship. My focus had to be on relationship with myself. And in order to do that, I had to come to the resolve that my value was not contingent on who wanted me.
I mean, talk about...
Well, that was very important insight too.
What a... I mean, this is, I think, the journey that we all have to go through. This is one of the most difficult things, to humble yourself and to admit, especially, you know, when we're getting into our 30s and everything like that, we have these expectations for ourselves and the grief of what we didn't become and what we thought we were going to become. And this pride, the ego, where you have to fight that. You have to tell yourself honestly if you need help. And then you have to then tell somebody else. You have to own that. Because as you were saying, like, you can't get out from under that, because it's that lie. It's that toxicity that you keep allowing in your life still, that always will have that power. So until you say, you can admit it has that power, you can't work on getting that back.
And Ryan, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said, when you talked about pride, because pride and humility are opposites. You can't have both at the same time. And so pride says, I'm okay, there's nothing wrong with me, or there's so much wrong with me, I can't tell nobody, because then what will they think of me? And yet, if we confess our shortcomings and our faults to one another and can get prayer, you know, receive prayer from one another, then we can begin our healing process. And so when I talk about that rectangle with a spiritual principle on each side, I would put, if I had to choose four, I would put honesty and humility, honesty on one side, humility on the other, forgiveness. But see, without honesty and humility, forgiveness is impossible. And so forgiveness would be on the third part of that rectangle. And then acceptance would be on the fourth, because those spiritual principles are so vital to growth, you know, so vital to growth. And we must grow. There's no such thing as standing still in life. Really, you're either going uphill or sliding downhill. But there's really no, even though we may feel stagnant, even when we feel stagnant, we're still moving either forward or backwards, uphill or downhill, you know?
Yeah. I think it'd be very easy to be caught up in that fear when you feel like you're sliding backwards, just being like, you know, or just the depression of being like, this isn't turning out the way I wanted it to be. And, you know, then to develop the hopelessness. So to rise above that, and obviously, you as the example here is just so impressive. And all the honesty and the things you've already shared with us about your own story, just want to say thank you for that. Like, you are incredibly authentic, and it comes through.
Thank you, Ryan.
And I very much appreciate that. I want to bring this around to just kind of how I take in the idea of toxic relationships as well. And, you know, we touched on how it doesn't just have to be a romantic relationship. It can be, you know, just the people and the company that you keep. You know, I've had moments in my own life where I've recognized that I was just seeking something external and surrounding myself with people that wanted maybe the same thing. And then, you know, I'd wake up 2 years later and be like, oh, that's not really what I want. And then there's a guilt of, I think, leaving those people behind. I feel like I'm cutting them out. And how are they going to feel about this? And then, you know, if they do call you out for that, like, then again, that hurts either my pride or whatever my image of myself, that I'm like, I don't wrong people. Like, how could I do this to myself or to these people? Really? It's more so,
yeah,
what am I doing to this person? Because that hurts me more. And it's, you know, at least in my case, it's easier to be nice to another person and, you know, compromising my own needs for so long. So that was a little challenge, you know. Sometimes ghosting people or just cutting out people that you decide are toxic to your life, they're just not congruent with what I need currently. And so I can't feel too guilty about that.
Yeah. You know, and here's the thing. So when you all were kind of, you know, hanging tight, you were together, like on the same level. And then when one person starts changing, they start growing. And if the other person doesn't change, they stay right there. And you're growing past it, not because you're better than, but because you have an awareness and you're better off than you were. Yeah. Has nothing to do with them. You know, you're better off than you were. And I think that we don't really realize sometimes that the change in us shines a light.
Yeah.
And that light will help them to see that. And so they may follow you, and not in terms of following you, but following the path out. Or they may not, but it's not your responsibility to determine, you know, to get them out. It's not, because if you saved them, you'd become their savior. But if their higher power, if God comes and gets you, and you have, you know, begin to attribute your awareness and your corrected vision, your corrected vision is no longer obscured vision. If you have to humbly attribute that to a power greater than you rather than take credit yourself, then you now realize that you have to depend on this ongoing relationship with this higher power in order to maintain, like, 31 years out of drug and alcohol addiction. I cannot, the only part of that I can take credit for is that I continue to humble myself so that I can receive the grace, the power that I need to keep moving forward. That's my part. That's my job, is to continually submit to the ways and ideas and key insights that are shown to me as the right way, because there are times when I don't want to do the right thing, you know, and I was like, I want to do this, you know, and it's like, okay, fine, but you go get some consequences for that,
right?
You know,
and wants versus needs. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that you were saying, and I'm not sure what your take is on this, Pam, but you were saying the idea around, I need to, you know, possibly be a good friend, we'll call that, and my pulling away or separating or not being a part of that relationship. And I, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I know that that's sometimes, it doesn't mean that as a good friend on a spiritual level that you're not still wishing those people well, or that you're not sending good wishes or hope in their direction. It's just that you've chosen to not be a part of that toxicity, and still on a spiritual level could be still sending you know, hope for them, or, you know, if that makes any sense. You could still be in your own way praying for them, or, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's a way to honor this caring for someone without having to do anything more, if that makes any sense.
And so, and it does, because when you change, when you come out from among the toxicity, now you have to put up, you have to have some boundaries, because there are certain devices that are common to people who are coming out of a toxicity, a toxic environment. And one is conversation. And so you're going to have to guard your ear gate and your eye gate from those toxic conversations, you know? And so it's going to look like you rejected them or you abandoned them. But for your own good, there's some conversations you just won't be able to engage in anymore. And I talk about that in the book. And I think it's in the last chapter. I talk about the conversation and then how distractions, you know, the people, the very people that you're separating from may begin to be resentful or maybe just miss you. And some of the things that they'll say will be negative for you because you're trying to change, even though to them it's positive. For instance, I'm not going to drink anymore. And so I stopped hanging out with my drinking friends. You're going through a divorce. They know you're going through a divorce. They mean well when they say, well, listen, just come on, hang out a little bit, get a drink, ease your mind. They mean well. Why? Because to them, a drink is the answer.
That's how you coped together before. Yeah, of course.
Exactly. And so you've got to guard your ear gate. There's some problems that you may be going through that normally you would share them with that group of people that you can't.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, you have to be careful not to be distracted. And Ryan, you touched on that when you said it's easier just to go ahead and go along than it is to make waves. And I'm paraphrasing what you said, but, you know, and it is easier to go with the flow than to make waves. But in order to obtain the new life that you're seeking, everybody, you can't please all of people all of the time, you know?
Of course. Well, it's a good thing. A good thing he has a mom that's not afraid to make waves.
That too. And I've gotten better. Like, I definitely describe myself as a people pleaser, but I've gotten better through working in the gig economy and, you know, getting to know myself as I struggle to survive out in the West Coast, of like putting up my boundaries of what I'm willing to do for work, you know, with just personal relationships, like protecting myself, being like, no, I'm not going to be abused or brought to the limit of this thing. And I, one thing I'm very proud of myself for is holding on to friendships that are pretty healthy, like as healthy as they can be. Because if I had to make a change, and if I told friends the next day, I was like, I just feel like, yeah, substances like drinking has been a bit of a distraction and I just don't want to have that anymore, you know, I wouldn't lose a friend. No one would, you know, everyone would be supportive and be like, oh, okay. Like, yeah, then if you don't need me to even offer you drinks anymore, like, you know,
yeah,
I get it. Like everyone, or if they did, they would be very apologetic. Like, oh, sorry, I forgot that we're doing that thing. But it's not conditional on like, that's part of our relationship. So, and I count myself lucky for that, but it's because, you know, we've had to cut off a couple along the way. There's been a couple that like, oh, that was me just kind of living a different lifestyle for a little bit. It wasn't the authentic me. And, you know, and as you come into more of the authentic you, I think there's still some, you know, what FOMO is, right? Like, you know, still some
fear of missing out
of like, yeah, there's still people around my age that get to live it up. And I feel like, are they enjoying every side of it, or they get to like go to the festival and kind of go crazy and then also have their job and have the stability? Like, you know, I challenge myself, or I question whether I could have that or if I want that. But I don't believe that I do, because I can look at examples of times maybe something went too far, or I didn't feel good afterwards.
You know, I've done you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, crazy here, but, you know, I've done some wild and crazy things.
Sure.
But the most meaningful and heartfelt experiences are sometimes just, and the most memorable are these really kind of healthy moments where a friend and I are laughing, or your dad and I are laughing, or seeing you and your brother laughing. And to me, that's been the moments of greatest joy, not this other kind of external thing that I'm using to experience excitement or pleasure, but this true inner experience.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I don't know, but I think that kind of applies to what you're talking about in terms of like, is it external or is it internal?
Yeah.
And, yeah. So you keep mentioning the book and one of the things that I we talk about here is resources for our listeners. And obviously you have the book. Would you like to talk about the title of that? And if there's any other resources you'd like to share with our listeners?
So the book is Toxic Relationships, Another Addiction. Is it love or are you just thirsty? You asked me a question earlier on. I didn't actually get around to answering it about individual therapy. Currently, what I do predominantly is the trainings where we met, where there are a lot, you know, various people on at one time. And we're walking through the training and you get CEUs at the end. But I also do what's called Kingdom Prep and Purpose sessions, KPP sessions. And these are for I'm a believer, I'm a Christian. And these are for people who are seeking to know a power greater than themselves on a higher level so that they can begin to walk in their purpose, you know, get some of the static and the debris from the past out of the way so that they can actualize their purpose and attain their best. And so that I do on a one-on-one basis through my ministry. And so, so those are a couple
of
resources.
It sounds like a lot like spiritual direction.
Absolutely is what it is.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So that's another angle here that you have is actually providing spiritual direction to people who are trying to sort that out, like you said, and getting all those kind of distractions and all those other things out of the way from truly how they become centered on and connected on there.
And if you are looking for this book, you should Google Pamela Morgan, Toxic Relationships, because there's another Pamela Morgan who's a Canadian musician who comes up, and we're not here to plug her. So be warned, it's not Pamela Morgan Lifestyle. That's somebody else. We're going
okay. We're look up and Pamela. And on that note, also, I have a YouTube page. And so when you go to YouTube, she comes up if you just put in Pamela Morgan.
Yeah.
So my YouTube page is Pamela Morgan and straight up. No Chaser. So if you put in straight up Chaser, that's the name of my broadcast that I do and on Facebook, Facebook Live, and then I load them up to YouTube. So
amazing.
Nice. Very nice. So our last question is if there's a certain philosophy, mantra.
I know we got a big one already. I'm wondering if that, would you say that's your mantra? The, what was it? You have to honesty.
That's one. Okay. If you can't get honest, you can't get free. But where my occupation and ministry, is concerned, and being a person who, works in the helping field and help, I help people on so many different levels. I think one of the dangers in being in operating in that is becoming arrogant and taking credit. So I live by this, and Julie, I don't know if I said
I'm humbled now because I was taking credit for my
what'd you say?
I'm being humbled now because I was taking credit for Ryan learning from me about not about being able to make waves.
No, listen. So here it is. Here it is. I don't take any credit and I don't take any blame. I just come to where I'm supposed to be and I drop it. I give what I have and I leave it to my higher power to do with it what he will. And I think that really helps, because working in the arena of helping people, you see some people get it and some people don't. Mm-hmm. And if you take credit for those that get it, you got to take the blame for those that don't.
Yeah.
But if you realize you're just a conduit through which a power greater than you flows, then you can just release it and step back and take your hands off and not get caught up. It helps me to not get caught up in being controlling, and owning people, you know? So I don't take any credit. I don't take any blame.
Yeah.
I just give what I got.
Incredible. That's really wonderful. I mean, you've talked about a lot. You've surrendered control of many things that you can't control, and you've given it up, and that has given you that power. It's giving you so much freedom, I believe, and it's
absolutely,
it's incredible. And that's, you know, I have many similar philosophies of working on just the things I can control and trying to work past the things I cannot. And so all of those are super helpful, and I respond to definitely.
that's good.
Yeah, well, we really want to thank you so much for being a part of our podcast and for all the wisdom that you shared today and the life experiences that you had that I think can be highly inspirational for all of us. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you, Ryan, for having me on your podcast. I appreciate the opportunity.
Of course. You have a good rest of your day, and I hope we get to talk to you another time.
Hey, can we give a contact number?
Yes.
Let's give the email. How about that?
Absolutely.
Sure. So,
Julie, you got it?
Sure. I can give it out. As the slow moving woman here is.
All the time
is.
In the world.
it's keyinsightstraining@gmail.com. And you can send your emails over to Pam, and any inquiries or interest in any of the services that she offers would be a great way to reach her that way.
And I'm also on Facebook. Just go to Facebook and put in Pamela Morgan.
Perfect. Easy to find, guys.
Well, we wish you well on going. Yeah, I was just going to say, we wish you well on your journey, and just really appreciate you being able to share some of that with us, and hope that you, as we continue to build our progress podcast here, if you have any other insights, we will be happy to have you back on and share those with us as well. Because I happen to know you're doing more than, you have several training programs and workshops that you offer. So we might just have to look up another one and
maybe
have you come on and talk about
another
something
time.
Else. Yes. Go look at the list. Look at the list. See what else you might want me to come and talk about. But I would like to eventually include my healing from pancreatic cancer.
Wow.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, twice. I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer 2010. And I had surgery 2012. I was diagnosed a second time and there was no answer. And they didn't have anything that they could do for me right then. Sent me home on pain medications and said, told my family to make me comfortable. And God had another plan. So here I sit.
Yes.
And we're so glad he did. We're so glad that we get to have you still. And man, you've turned this all into your own power, and that's so amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, and you take care. And we hope that you can all listeners feel free to inquire and send us any questions or comments, and we can happily pass those along as well to Pam if there's some other parts of this that you'd all like to ask.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thanks again for your time, Pam.
All right. Take care.
All right.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, I definitely could sense a really strong spiritual base to her that really just plays such an important part of her recovery, and just can see how instrumental that has been in who she's been able to, how she's ended up where she is at today.
She has, she just dropped the other huge personal struggle, battle that she went through with cancer on us.
Yeah.
Right at the end there, she's been through a lot, 3 to 4 times as much as the average person, I would say, with a lot of the trauma she's experienced. And it makes sense. She had, put her belief in her power into the greater power and using that. And it's clear it's so strong for her and she relies on it so much. And that's why she made that foundation for herself. She talked about she didn't have a foundation before. And that's why she's able to look at all of these experiences and talk about them rather comfortably, being like, yeah, I went through this. And
well, it gives you a lot of sense of groundedness and a sense of meaning too.
Mm-hmm.
But just the guiding principles. I mean, the 12-step program is basically a spiritual program too. So just the guiding principles around that. And, I'm not a great expert here, but the one of the co-founders was atheist until he went to a treatment program, and it was my understanding, I'm not telling the story probably very accurately, but he went to a program that he was told to go to because nothing else was working, and it was run by a bunch of nuns. And so he was already exposed to spirituality, and he goes into his room after one of the meetings that he had or group sessions he had there.
Yeah.
And he says to God, for the first time in his life, even interacting or making a connection, if you are real, reveal yourself to me. And his room was engulfed in light. And so in this moment, he begins to identify that possibly there is a spiritual higher power, and that becomes his journey that supports his recovery and then becomes one of the influencing factors of how he became a co-founder.
Really?
And so I think that's I think it's an interesting tidbit, but again, I want to say I may have told the story partially tweaked wrong, so I apologize to anybody that says no, that's not exactly correct, and terrible job.
Sure, but I think the meaning behind,
I say that humbly.
Very good, very important to humble yourself. Yeah, the meaning behind it is there still.
We have to see that there is something as a resource in our life that we can go to and turn to, rather than our ego that gets in the way. Right, so we're getting out of our ego and we're turning to our higher power, which helps us get out of our ego and ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes sense to have a belief system like that to, that would help manage the ego. Cause then you're doing it for something else. You're not, looking at yourself selfishly. This is just for me. This is for my advancement. This is for my money.
Which to me kind of has, it's just temporary. It doesn't really have much value or connectedness or sense of meaning as much, I guess. But anything else you want to add to about our experience today, honey, before we wind down here?
Just that it was a great guest. I like that we had a, a helping professional that also is training other helping professionals. It's really important, clearly her seminars and her lessons are from, an informed life from firsthand experience. And so you can tell that she's speaking truth to power and to things that she knows, has lived. And so, and then seeing, if you were to be in a seminar with her, looking at what she's been through, makes you believe it's possible, makes you believe that you're recovering, anything is possible. Because you're like, wow, look at what she's been through and how she's still treating it and how she's, made that her life, made it her passion. And so I'm always so inspired by individuals like that.
And it just really plays how important it is that we take an honest look at ourselves and to be honest. I think that was really something that she said loud and clear, that part of getting healthy is doing that. And I think that's my takeaway too, is just to keep remembering to share that with people, that, you know, getting honest with yourself is a journey towards health. So
it's not easy. I think one tip for that, she mentioned she was writing a lot. I think try journaling. If you aren't like having these conversations with yourself and really, you know, you feel maybe like uneasy and it's really hard for you to have those inner dialogues, journaling is when you actually have that really natural thought process and how I, you know, I analyze a lot of things, because then I'm thinking of it as I write it down, and then I'm looking at it, I'm reading it later, I'm like, that was my thought process then. How interesting that that can change. And it really gives you, you know, you get to track yourself over time too. It's really interesting reading back on my own entries too.
Right. And there's a certain degree of what we call the observing self. So here we are, I'm writing, and I might, maybe I'm in my ego, and then I step back and I look at what's happening. And now I'm looking from another, we call it observing ego is what they refer to it as. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm looking at it from another lens. And so it's cool. Very cool. I like the suggestion there too.
Yeah. Well, I feel pretty good about today's episode. I don't know if you want to get to anything else today.
Actually, I think that we had, you know, quite a bit here already, and I just want to thank our listeners for joining us. And I hope that you just shed some light on a greater understanding about the addictive process. I think there's a lot to be said, and even to talk about this more. So I think we could even, you know, delve into this even more.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot to take away from this, just this episode, with how much, you know, she talks about a true self-examination. You know, if anything that was brought up today is something that you resonate with, there there can be something you're like, you know, I do want to examine that a little bit closer in my life. And so it might be worth the time.
Definitely.
Well, great. Thank you again, Mother, for a lovely episode. And I look forward to our next conversation next week.
Likewise. And I hope everybody has a great week. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. Thanks for listening to Therapy with My Mom. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can best support us by reviewing and downloading the episode on whatever platform you listen on. Tell your family and loved ones about the show, and don't forget to follow and engage with us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter at Therapy with My Mom. You can also email us at therapywithmymom@gmail.com with any topic suggestions or stories you might want to have shared on the show.
Great job, Ryan.
Thanks, Mom.